Welcome to a forum on media and honesty. Let me tell you just a little bit about a forum here at Holden Village. We have sort of a pattern for it. We even have some of it written out here, so we try to do it. It works best when there are differences of opinions. And it turns out there aren't going to be differences of opinions, then it sort of waters down away from what we call a forum. Because a forum is set up here where we specifically want people who feel differently about issues to have a chance to say so without feeling they're going to be clobbered or set down or whatever it is. And so in a forum for us, we ask the folks to lead off with just a few words and then let people just talk to that issue in any direction that they want to go. There's no set pattern. So it isn't designed to say, how do we settle the issue of media and honesty, but how do we talk about it and maybe have differing points of view? If we do, all the better. Therefore, we ask that you, that you speak for yourself when you speak. But don't say, the way it is that, but just say, I think, or I believe, I feel, whatever it is. Then you speak for yourself and you allow the next person to say the same kind of thing because they may feel different than you and you don't have to clash one way that or another. I'll serve as the moderator for this evening. That means I don't get to talk about this. And I'll do my very best for the time of the discussion to be non-committal. That's not going to be easy, but I work at that anyway. And we'll go till 9:30. That we say that because if we're having a good discussion and people are really different sides, we'll just close it right then, even though we're in the middle of something, and invite because we decided in advance, and it will be fair to whomever happens to be speaking. You don't have to worry about that. And then anybody wants to stay and talk afterwards, fine. You know, we can just keep on going. That's in case we get some good disagreement going, which would be fine. Don't have to, don't manufacture it, but let it come out if it's there. And no one is to be put down or knocked off or anything like that. Altering views, welcome, and I'll try to keep it so that the same people don't speak all the time too, okay? We'll look around for folks to speak and others to speak before you go back at it again. With those kinds of things underway, we'll turn to our two folks who have a chance to say something to us. Would you read? Who wants to read off? All right, Carrie's going to start.
My name is Carrie. You can save your hard questions for Joan. She's been around more, has seen more, especially nationally. My journalism background is small town newspaper, specifically in Oregon, Lebanon, and Cottage Grove. And I'm not particularly ashamed of that because a lot of us live in small towns, and newspapers serve an important function in small towns and cities. And sometimes big things can come out of small towns. And that's fun as a journalist to be part of letting the rest of the state, or sometimes indirectly the rest of the nation, know about it. In Oregon, Cottage Grove was one of the first lumber towns to attract an electronics firm, and when that was the thing to do. It's not so much the thing anymore. But people from Portland were coming down to find out how Cottage Grove did it. A local family won a Supreme Court case, the right to teach their children at home. Kind of stirred up some circles. And a local baker figured out how to freeze and ship frozen croissants. So now we have a multi-million dollar croissant factory in Cottage Grove. So all that was real fun to be a part of. So the role I've played as a journalist, mostly cheerleader isn't quite the right word, but I haven't had to, or I haven't been involved in the long investigative type stories where there's lawsuits and people lose their businesses and their reputations. And, but I have let some dumb things into print. Those were embarrassing both to the paper and to the person who was either misquoted or misunderstood. And that kind of brings me to the point. Joan and I met a little bit out under the tree in the shade this afternoon, and we kind of wanted to call this, instead of honesty, dishonesty in journalism, a bias and unbiased, because you don't often intentionally hurt someone. You don't intentionally put something false in the paper. For one thing, lawsuits are kind of a detriment to that. But it's not quite that simple. I'll let Joan talk about the politics sometimes of newspapering and the fact that since it is a business that can affect how and if stories get run. She's got some good examples. I'll just close my introduction with a couple of observations pertaining to the power or lack thereof of the media. The first one being, you read these opinion polls where 4 out of 5 Americans don't know the difference between the Sandinistas and the Contras in Nicaragua. It seems like that's in every news story. So either people aren't understanding what the reporter has written, or people aren't reading the papers. That's kind of humbling. Second example would be my father on election day. On our last out, Chris and I went to Oregon where my family lived. And one of the days happened to be an election day. And before he went down to the polling booth, he took the scissors and cut out the editorial endorsements and said, oh, I haven't been keeping up on the issues, so I'll just vote according to this. And if a lot of people are letting the newspapers dictate how they vote, that's kind of a scary thing.
I do come from another side of journalism. I envy Carrie for her small town closeness. I've gotten into the bigger city. I started out in Columbia, Missouri, which is a college town. Had the rare advantage of working on a paper that was run by women. The top 3 managers, of which I was the 3rd, were female. It doesn't happen very often. It's a very male-dominated business, as a lot of big businesses are, which I think journalism has become. The 2 papers, the main papers I spent most of my time on, Star Telegram, Fort Worth, and Denver Post, and have gotten into the investigative, the Pulitzer Prize winning type pieces, that a lot of the mistakes that I've seen go into the paper and some of them that I failed to catch or have blundered and put in myself, they have major repercussions. It's a daily pressure that doesn't ever let up, because as soon as it breaks down, it starts over again the next day. I'm not so sure, and I think the biased, unbiased, or to say that thorough or just skimming to get the necessities in is much more accurate than honesty or dishonesty, because of why make up stories in the paper. Some people do. Janet Cook, Washington Post, the most common, embarrassment. It's usually some personal gain rather than an overall paper's view point, but it doesn't come out as that. I don't think it's the kind of reader. The kind of reader doesn't even see a byline that says Washington Post or Denver Post or your paper's name at the top. Things I think that feed into the faulty presentations that papers have. One, they're losing the competitive checks. I happen to work in one of the last competitive markets. Rarely do you find 2 papers that are neck and neck. For the few cities that have 2 papers that are independently owned, meaning 2 different companies, not necessarily independent papers, one is usually far ahead. Dallas, for those of you that are close by, Times Herald is just struggling like crazy. The Morning News has got, double, triple the circulation all of a sudden. Mine would change hands all the time. That competitive check keeps you on your toes. You can't get away with as much. The reader can take an editorial endorsement from one paper and compare it to the other, and when they're completely diverse questions, without that, with the monopolies, people's intelligence has to play a bigger part of it. You can't just take it for granted. There's competition within our own chains. I was looking today to try and find out what's going on in the last week. And in U.S. News, I found out that Times Mirror, which owns the newspaper I own, just bought, paid $600 million for the Baltimore Sun and a couple of stations, which means they broke it down at $1,232 per subscriber. And they're sinking that much money into a monopoly situation. And when I know my paper's struggling, how much money are they going to give our city? So you're going to play to that big power, and that you lose your independence and your news judgment and what you're going to present, because if it's controversial and you lose subscribers over it, you lose money. And just people that have came into the business 30 years ago, much less I just came in 10, 15 years ago, tell stories about and it was called yellow journalism back then, but you've got to start wondering when you get into the management side, which I have, what's better to challenge and to dig up a lot of dirt and to throw things at people and say, what are you going to say about that? Or to tell stories and tell what they want to hear because it makes money. It's because with the advertisers. Another thing nobody reads, I don't think, when you say the surveys of what people don't recognize, what they don't know. I worked as an assistant business editor for 2 years. And time after time, you have to put in definitions of what a simple transaction would mean. Preferred stock, common stock. People wouldn't know. And those are things that if you read newspapers every day, business plays a big part in that. And a lot of the management is now, USA Today is thorn on my side, and people just, you know, love that kind of thing. 7 inches, it's a quick hit. You don't have to turn the page to finish. They don't jump their stories. And more newspapers are doing it. And how to be fair and biased, unbiased, when you have to tell everything in 7 inches. You can't do it. And the poor reporters that write these long exposés, and I get to be the butcher, and I get to cut out, you know, and then a lot of error enters in. And it's frightening because, you know, it's not so much cutting out a man's or a woman's first name, the first reference. It's cutting out just entire sides. We've got a big issue in Denver right now, pollution. And the environmentalist versus the polluter, Martin Marietta, huge deal. We've got a whole county that's contaminated. People can't drink the water. It's hard to present a thing and explain what PCBs are in 8 inches and what's happening to these people. That's what papers are turning to, though, because they're competing with radio, TV. I don't know if the woman's here that worked for radio. It's hard for me to imagine getting on and talking for 2 minutes. I'm not good at speaking. I hide behind written words, and you can, you know, it seems 15 inches. You read 15 inches, and you've blown a newscast. And that kind of, that's 80% of people depend on TV, I think, is the latest number for their main source of information. They don't pick up the paper. Sunday papers are exempt from that, those figures, I think. Government influence and pressure is another thing that, I don't know, that's another issue. I don't know if you want to get into that. And I thought another thing to get into would be what men and women, the different influences they might have on the press as far as writing styles, what women cover and what men cover as far as reporters or different editors. There's a, you know, it's the, now they call it the living and the features sections. Well, it's still in every managing editor's mind, it's the women's section. And when I get to a certain level where they want to figure out where to promote me, guarantee that'll be the first place they think, unless you buck real hard. And that's, I think, true throughout papers that are above, say, 30,000 circulation in that field there. If you look throughout, there's one woman published, I mean, Katherine Graham is a big exception. And you can really see it in the paper and the way she's worked with people if you talk. And she got it through, you know, her husband's death. You know, it's like every other big business in the country. I don't know if people realize that when they pick up a paper and want to say, well, you know, why is the paper boy not carrying it to my door? It's a big business, and a lot gets lost in that.
Okay. That's plenty to lead into. And your temptation, it seems to me, is going to be to say, well, tell us more about what you do. And that's fine. It won't necessarily be a forum that way. But if you've got opinions about what's going on, or if you think they're being defensive for their industry or whatever else it may be, that's your opportunity to comment or question or say your own point of view. Just hold up a hand so we can point to you. Somebody wants to jump off? Yeah.
I don't understand what you're talking about 8 inches. Maybe I'm not a lot of nervous on
those. If you pick up a paper, I've got the USA Today. This is about, this story right here is probably 9 or 10 inches. And if you read through it, there's different point sizes and everything. They use a little bit bigger type, so it's easily read. And you can basically tell, you know, you have your main, you know, your first graph or whatever, and you can't tell very much of a story in that chart of.
So they're limited to that?
Mm-hmm.
They can't go on page 15 and go
see,
on?
See, this paper does not jump. They usually jump one story. And they have, how many stories do they have?
Yeah.
Jumping means, okay, just say, please see story on page 3, you know, and you turn. Each page is about, you could put about, I'm trying to multiply, 120 inches worth of a story. If you wrote one story on a page, on a broadsheet, which is what this is, you'd have about 120 inches of written word. And, you know, that's, in a book, it's probably a half a chapter at the most, I would guess, in a normal chapter to tell an entire issue. And it's hard. It's real hard.
That's because people are too lazy to turn the page.
People won't turn the page. They, a lot of times, that's the importance of headlines. The majority of people are either headline readers, they'll read the first and the last graph, or if they see that it jumps, they'll read to that, and then they'll finish. And watch your eye, you know? It's just, we compete, the Denver Post competes against a tabloid. And why, when the circulation goes crazy, they take surveys, and they say, well, it's easier to read, and your comics stink, you know? And that's what the majority of Denverites base. Why, you know, why they buy that paper? Because they can hold it better. They don't judge anything on content. I mean, that's over exaggeration, but the majority, that's the reasons you get.
Yes. You talked about bias a bit, that you say I'm trying not to be biased. The whole thing of something being unbiased seems ridiculous to suggest to me. The mere fact, I mean, you can have, there are certain things in the mob blazing, you know, that you can say that this is good and this is the only argument, so you present the two sides. But the mere fact that you talk about, that we decide that this various things are news, that what happens in, that the fact that the president had a spot on his nose is news, or whether you talk about Central America or South Africa, that's bias in itself. That's just as much bias and just as much deciding what the people should be interested in and what should be news as is saying this is the only point of view or black people are stupid or anything like that. The other, it seems to be just as much bias anyway. And I think the thing to do is to get rid of the idea that some news things and some things aren't biased. Everything is 100% biased. You know.
Now, the trick about a forum is now that wasn't directed to them, but
right.
To all of us. And so your response is invited that. They don't have to answer that. If they want to, they can hold up their hand too. If you want to respond to something that he's saying, sure.
Well, I think that's quite true. I've been involved in demonstrations, large demonstrations that didn't get even an inch of print in any of the major cities that we were in. And the fact that the papers didn't even choose to print anything at all about the issues, which involved sizable numbers of people, is in effect telling everyone else that these issues aren't happening or this is newsworthy. It's just editing, it's erasing history.
It's frightening sometimes to be in the middle of that and in that decision process, because I've got the advantage of being able to read 6, 7, 8 wire services. You know, New York Times and Knight Ridder News Service, Washington Post, it all comes into it. And then you choose and you put, you know, 1/100th of that in the paper. And you've got 6 reporters and 10 things going on. And the process by things get eliminated, and a lot of times the more controversial and the more pivoted anti-abortion or you know, pro-choice it's a big issue right now in Denver and Boulder, and the coverage, unless violence or unless there's protest or whatever, you know, if it threatens to break out, or if all the other media is going to be there, that's usually when the Denver Post chooses to cover it.
You have your hand in back. Are you, on this subject, you want to wait?
No, it's not on this.
Okay, let's wait for a second, see if there's anybody else on this, then we'll pick you up again.
Well, we had the advantage, too, of we were next to Eugene. And Eugene had the daily paper. They did all the national, international rapes, murders, and we could, we had the luxury of, like you say, the features of the community. Yeah.
Just a little
exactly.
Smaller. Yes, sir.
Do you remember, I'm Vince Keller. I worked 35 years on small daily. Not in the editorial anymore. On the advertising end, they are bound by certain things too. Mechanically, they are bound by certain things. There's a percentage of advertising and a percentage of editorial matter that goes into every edition. And from time to time, they'll vary, of course, but most newspapers have set a policy where they'll put 75% in advertising and 25% of the column space into the editorial end. And they've got the problem sometimes of trying to commit what they have to write into a certain space. And so they're limited. The space is limited. Often you'll find that the stories are squeezed and maybe some of the good content is left out. I'm not trying to defend them because there's a real wall between the retail advertising end and the editorial end. And it's got to be that way because so often you go out, you have accounts, and you go out to talk to them. Vince, here's a half-page ad, we'd like to run with you. But we also got a nice little publicity story to take them. We want the editorial man to run with you. No way will we accept advertising in those conditions. There's no way. And yet, those advertisers, you know, they almost feel like you're kicked when you take them. They won't take that and help them on the publicity end. But space limitation is a big factor in what the editorial content is in the industry.
Okay. Anyone else? Back here.
We're from a small town up on the peninsula, and we get a small paper out of Port Angeles, and then we get two daily users. Jimmy Come Lately Gazette and the Port Townsend Leader. And we get more accurate local news than what Seattle gets in their Seattle PI and their Seattle Times of actual local news. Now, national news and things, you don't get as much of it. You'll get one long column of it, and that'll be national, world, and all. But you read every bit of your paper. And I think the small town has advantage of that, but they don't have the monies coming in for the advertisement and things that the bigger newspapers do, the bigger papers carry.
By the way, I was the advertising manager on Port Angeles News for about 3 years. That's right. It's a local newspaper and a good one.
Yeah.
It's an excellent one. The first offset daily in the state of Washington.
Yeah, I just want to say, come back again. I know I appreciate what you said. You are in a position where you're getting a lot of stories. You've got to choose what to accept and what to reject, and for various reasons you'll choose the less controversial because the papers are going to sell more and this kind of thing sometimes. And you know, but this is all as if I was made doing the editing. If anyone in the world is just totally biased all the way for whatever things you base it on, it's just biased. And then for the faith of the media or any of us when we talk, to pretend that we haven't got bias just isn't true, and you know, it annoys me sometimes when I hear papers saying, oh, we are not papers, but anything saying we're not biased, because we are, everything's so biased, you know, and with opinions change, you know, just by the things you include and don't include, and I know you've got to do that, you've only so much space in the newspaper, but that is biased, you know.
We tried to compensate for that a little bit just by teamwork. You know, the reporters have one opinion, the editor may have a different opinion, and our publisher, so if you're just sitting there talking and throwing all the things on the table, you can often if I have a bias or a blind spot, the other person hopefully will catch that.
Yes, it's still biased though, don't you think?
Oh,
still,
yeah.
If you have 50 people making
a
decision, if you have
it's human nature. You can't get away
from
that.
Yeah, right. And to suggest that it's giving the objective picture or the almost objective picture just isn't too. In music or I don't think there's such a thing as objectivity.
I think readers have a responsibility too. When you're reading a quote by the president of a company, you've got to realize what he's saying.
Oh,
possibly
sure.
Might not all be true. Hopefully in the next paragraph there's a quote from someone else outside the business. So you can balance it
and
as
I
a reader.
You've got to realize the things that the paper hasn't included as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I have a new topic.
Fine. Well, let's go back there and then to you. Please, yeah.
On a prior topic, USA Today. USA Today is now the third largest circulation in the land and it's only been in existence a couple of years. I find personally that it whets my appetite when I only have two short columns on the story so that I'll reach out and grab the San Francisco Chronicle or the Sacramento Bee or the Los Angeles Times. What I might not have, if I had stuck with one newspaper that didn't give some multiplicity of subjects, such as USA does. You mentioned the one story that has the tie on the side. They have four stories, the front page of each section. And they're very adequately giving detail what is the thrust of that particular item. You also have from USA Today something that no other newspaper has, and that is listing every state in the Union with the top news item in at least three cities of that state every day insofar as main news, sports, and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to put in a plus for USA Today and causing people to want to read more of an item that some other paper may not even include on the obituary.
I, along those lines, I find that a lot of times I listen to the morning news on the radio and I find out, you know, something happening in the world, I want to know more about that, so go to the newspaper. Different newspapers give me different.
If it works that way, that's great.
Yeah.
One thing about that being the third largest, they're losing millions of dollars to. They spread those papers out a lot of places. I mean, to justify that's not. I don't think it's. I read it too. When I'm in an airport, I'll grab it to see what's going on back home. You know, I'll see a couple of graphs and wonder. I hope my reporter got that story. You know, because there's one sentence there, and I realize that's in the area he has to cover. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there with business interests back home, or just they want a taste. What I'm saying is that a lot of papers in every city are running scared and just want to give that taste because they see the large readership numbers and the people talking about it. The weather maps, there's very, very few companies that haven't gone to that expensive, very expensive presentation of weather. It's changing the industry.
Great. I'm going to talk about governmental influence. There was two past events and then a current problem. The Ellsberg papers and what happened when those were published by the New York Times and what the Nixon administration did to try and intimidate Ellsberg, including breaking into the psychiatrist's office. What happened when the Chicago Tribune had a recent editorial in which they spilled the beans and said, "We have a story to tell," which is back in the Nixon administration, they had gotten a story about some undercover things that were going on. They got a direct call from the White House telling them to hold the story under the banner of national security. And what it was the story about the plumbers unit working to cover up what already happened. And they held the story for 2 days until they realized that they had been misled. And they said that is a good example of how the most responsible papers in the country do indeed allow the government to
tell them what they can print or should or should not print. They do it. And they use that illustration as a point of reference in that right now they're saying it seems obvious that the government, the administration now, wants to take on either a newspaper or a network and take them to court and convict them under the Information Act, which is to say that if information is privileged or is worthy of non-access, that they may not publish it, even if the case right now is that the Russians had information that was given to them by this Navy spy, and the papers published by given them, and they're being, the government's going after them now. Even though the Russians already have it, the papers are being told that they may not publish it because the government says it's secret. And I think the issue I have, as I understand the Constitution and the whole issue of journalism, that whenever we get ourselves in a situation where any governmental thing, including the federal government, dictate to the press, print, or media, what they can publish, we are in a very problematical, if not dangerous situation.
In response to that, we'll wait time and we'll be spoken a couple of times, see if there's somebody else. But then we'll be welcome again. David.
Sort of a follow-up to that, I guess, and a question regarding one of the things that was talked about earlier was the whole move toward what has been called disinformation, intentional giving of wrong information by various governmental agencies or units under the guise of whether it's national security or something else, which obviously raises all kinds of moral issues, both in terms of who we are as free people, as well as other things. Question at this point, what mechanisms are available to folks like yourself and others in major city newspapers to be able to discern what is disinformation and what isn't? And secondly, what do you see coming?
I think one of the most recent examples, and it's still going on, we don't have it, is Chernobyl, where you mentioned it the other night. So I went to see what the latest reports were, and we've got a Newsweek in the U.S. News and World Report, and they're still, they're not even going to figure 2,000, as every media did for the first 2 weeks. But they're still saying, I wrote some down, it was in one paragraph they said that, it said, quote, the death count in the Soviet Union is, this is just editorializing, this is what how they're presenting, is rising steadily, and radioactivity from the April 26th reactor is fiercely circling the globe. This is from a month later, it's May 26th, U.S. News and World Report. They wait till about four paragraphs later, long paragraph, you know, several columns over, and then they say, Soviets have reported that 13 persons have died by mid-May. And that's the only solid number they have now, somewhere in the middle there. But they're not coming out and saying the government knows. The government has five satellites. You can't tell me Washington has no idea the immensity or what proportion that tragedy had. And the way to get that is the only way I think the media really can get at that is sources. And the old-fashioned reporting and doing digging and having to use unnamed sources. You know, finding somebody inside was picked off. And that comes by digging. There's a plant in Washington that's got the graphite reactor. Well, they said that's the only one that has a backup. One of our reporters made a simple call to one of his PSC, the public service people that really angry and happened to be a personal friend of his, found out one in Fort St. Vrain, which is in Denver's backyard. Same thing. We still had it on map on May 26th of Newsweek, that the one in Washington is the only one. Disinformation or blind spots or just shallow reporting or expectations. I don't know. I think it's getting worse, and I don't know if it's because of conservative politics or what.
Sarah first.
Yeah.
Sarah, here first. Okay, Vince was first again.
I just wondered if we might just get some kind of an idea. And dishonesty in both the editorial end and the advertising end, did it seem to be a more prevalent in the editorial end or in the advertising? This for my own satisfaction, I'm no longer in the business, but do we as advertising people, they get accused often of dishonesty and copyright and so forth. Does it seem to be more prevalent though in the advertising end or over there in the editorial?
Or equal, yeah.
I'd like to know.
Advertisers always tell, when we have this discussion between the two departments, that they have a license to have subliminal, I can say that word very well.
Subliminal.
Thank you. Effects on people to lure them into their product.
Uh-huh.
And then editorial people come back and say, well, then we've got a product. It goes back to that thing. Yeah. Why can't we lure these people in by flashy headlines or, you know, semi-lewd pictures and just, you know, go for that.
Yeah. Vince was interested in having people talk about what where you feel.
Is there any dishonest copywriting and advertising that I'd kind of like to know if you bumped into it?
We won't spend a long time on that, but if people want to express about that, whatever. Does anybody want to?
Well, I think dishonest advertising is as bad as dishonest editorial.
He's saying, do you experience as much dishonest advertising as editorial stuff?
I think it's balanced.
It's pretty balanced.
Very balanced.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I think that people are inclined to expect exaggeration or some sort of distortion from advertising. They don't expect it from their news stories and they're getting it anyway. So it's more dangerous than editorial.
Yeah, I'm coming back to what I said earlier with the dishonesty related to the editorial. I think that with the reading newspaper, you've got to look best, because you can't read the newspaper and think that you're reading facts lightly, but there's a good chance that you might not be. I think at best you've got to doubt it. And for my personal way that I read the newspaper, I assume that it's very likely wrong, and try and look for it. but try and look for a certain amount of facts within that certain amount of consistency, I think your personal discernment is very important. If you look at the newspaper, if you read a newspaper, and think any newspaper, think that you're going to get the picture, the details, and just what I need to know about what's going on in the world, or even two or three newspapers or two or three news shows on TV, I think you're going to be well off the mark, you know.
Mm-hmm. Three people are up for it. Gloria, please.
Oh, I look around and I think they couldn't lie. They had whatever they didn't have. That had to be true. It had to be proven to be true if you want. But it could also have a North American impact.
I don't know an ad writer that tries to collect dishonest copy. I don't know one. In the years I've worked, they may do their own style.
The other question I have was about the misinformation and disinformation. Is that partly why the public is so hesitant to write to their government about issues? They don't know what is accurate to even say or to discuss intelligently because they hurt them in the business.
Somebody might want to respond to that. Rich had his hand, and then Craig.
It's something different than the advertising.
Okay. Anybody more on the whole general advertising thing? We were moving back and forth from that. Anyway. Is that what you're going to speak to, Carlos?
Yes. I'm going to speak about one issue in advertising.
Okay.
I think that's what I cannot say about newspapers, but in the TV, you can see. For example, advertising of McDonald's, where a black comes together with a white, and they are in the same level as the other. It's okay, but that's not true.
and so I see that they are not all that. It's not that they are saying that this product means it means and what it doesn't mean, but they try to use emotion instead, and they put a white color or a big nice color in things that they are not so nice.
Yeah. Are you talking to that? I have three other people waiting to have them. Go ahead. Good, go ahead.
I think they often mislead by omission. As an example, I recently answered an ad in a paper for a tape of the month club, musical tape. Sounded real interesting. They built it up real good. But the one important thing that they left out was the fact that if they would send you a notice every month, and if you didn't reply, you got the editor's choice of the page. Well, I couldn't handle this because my husband and I do a certain amount of traveling. I didn't want them just sending any old page. So I'm waiting now, after several weeks, to get an answer back. What do I do with the free tapes you sent me? I'm not going to keep them. I feel that that was very misleading for them to leave out that important piece of information. To me, it was very important. To some people, it might not be.
Yeah.
May I speak to that?
Well, as long as you're not defending it, because you don't have to.
Just a tip. If that happens, go to the Better Business Bureau and let them put some pressure on that particular firm. Just a tip.
Thank you. Rich has been waiting.
One thing that strikes me out of the information that you provided in your paper is that when I came to the forum tonight thinking about the notion of dishonesty or bias in general, I guess I mostly thought about the political influence of either of the publishers of the paper or the editors of the paper or deliberate disinformation. But what I'm hearing is that perhaps even more important in terms of the effect on how newspapers and citizens report is really the economics of the publishing business and the way in which the whole movement from the written word is being the primary communicating device to the visual image. That in the same way that teachers in classrooms are having trouble with kids that have been raised on Sesame Street and beyond and TV, so papers are struggling with how to be a written world and written word ease in a largely visual and electronic. And that seems to have much more impact than direct influence, political influence.
Are you responding to that?
I agree. I really do. And I think the political influence, I don't downplayed. I think it's becoming equal. I think once you got away from the family-oriented, this is a family-owned newspaper, rather, you got away from the editor saying, I want to see this today. The editor's out there talking to your main advertiser, Interstate Banking or Continental Airlines, trying to patch up a messed up story. It's more of a influx from the world out there and business and the bottom line, and how are you going to make this section look better rather than what's your story going to be tomorrow. Many times I'll go into a meeting, a managing editor who is he's not the top level, he's probably there's three or four editors above him. I didn't even look at the paper that day. He doesn't even know. We're talking about stories put in the next day's paper. Well, do we have that in today's paper? And he fumbles around, and busy man, got a lot of business dealings. 15, 20 years ago, they were newsmen back then, would die. it really has changed.
Got a number of hands. Bob, was yours up before?
Yeah, I wanted to
get
back to Dave's question.
Right, go ahead, go back at it then. Go ahead.
Craig was making comments about direct government information or
indirect government control by government offices giving out occasionally false information. When I first hear that, you know, it's crazy. I mean, I noticed that as soon as we talk about that, we start talking about Chernobyl. Well, all my life, I know the Russians do that. But I didn't think we did that here. But I suppose after I sit back and think about it for a while, I'm going to have to say, well, you know, great, that may be what I guess I'm going, has been going on all my life too.
How long did it take to find out about Three Mile Island?
And the U.S. government office says, you know, from there on, I guess I'm like Simon. I read it and say, that's a lie. I mean, no, that's not true. But it does seem to be deteriorating to the extent that now, you know, that's a topic, that it's got a label, it's got a name, and they even apparently, I keep starting to tell, but apparently they've owned up to it yet, without the intention of all the information.
Okay. Great. Then we have Wayne back there, and Quinn.
Same thing, but responding to Simon. Yeah, read the papers critically, understand there's bias, but what's the alternative?
Oh, yeah.
To a free press.
Sure, yeah. I'm not saying, I mean, I was trying to imply the alternative to me is just acknowledging that it's there, you know, not pretending that it can be run away. It's people today who talk about because they've got to be, we are the ones that do it here. I'm not agreeing. When I was left, and it's considerably worse, except for one or two days, it's considerably worse than the majority of it in the American press. And they're all full of, we give it to you straight, which is in their load of rubbish, most of them are just, well, they're terrible things. But, you know, just to acknowledge that the bias is there, that the subjectivity, that's all it is, that a lot of the stories are going to be wrong, you know, as well, they're going to be wrong.
I'm just saying, I want to emphasize, I think, that our country, our nation, all of us have a tremendous stake in maintaining a free press. Because the alternative to that is a control press where the government just tells us what they want to hear. And that we can be as critical of the media as we should be, but we need to understand how important it is, and I think how fragile it is.
Wayne?
Just a question, given the thing that you said about how news is manipulated and how we really need to question what is truth when we read, I keep trying to figure out what my Christian responsibility is in society and trying to figure out what it is on particular issues, and I'm a little more frightened as to how to figure that out when I'm not sure that I'm doing truth. And maybe we can help with somebody to help with that, but obviously making responsible decisions about ethics and decisions depends on finding truth.
Okay, first from them, and then
I was just going to say, as a reader now, not as a journalist, especially here, hold on, what are the resources? By reading a newspaper, I read the Christian Science Monitor here, and then some of the magazines, Sojourners, The Other Side, Christianity Today, some of the, you know, trying to find different points of view, and they do sound different. They do approach it from different perspectives. I feel better about what I decide or how I act after having read several different things, but it takes work to do that.
I think, as I've been heard from advertising, from all different points of view, it's not so much a lie as it just barely touches on the truth and leaves you with a false sense of either security or information. In the Christian Science Monitor article that was up on the board, there was a reference to the Bingham family and how they got out of a Louisville paper. Really didn't, I mean, just touched on it and said, well, it was a family organization and they agreed to do this and that, and finally Bingham Sr. sold it. It was a war in the family. Terribly so. It was a very, the women were kicked off the board. There's a lot behind that, and I think the more you read on a subject, the more you can discern the more information you can get. You can find one paragraph in a story and find a whole other story on it that's in depth, either from that area or something like that.
Cool.
Cool. We didn't solve the problem. We promised that we wouldn't. And that's the way that it is. The continuation of a forum at Holden is to hang around afterwards if you want and then chat. Make it part of the conversation at the breakfast table or wherever you are, or just keep it going any way you want. And these folks will be around for, Joan, for a few days yet, and Carrie. You can certainly spend time with them as well. Thanks for making it a good forum. Very much. And thanks to you folks.